Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Mitch Tite.
And I'm Bonnie North. We've recalled the story of Lance Saijon on this show before. Saijon was a Milwaukee native and an Air Force fighter pilot in Vietnam. His plane crashed over Laos, and he survived for more than a month in the wilderness before being captured. He was tortured in a POW camp before he died in 1968. Saijon was posthumously awarded the Medal of Honor.
His sister, Janine Saijon Rosina, has been working for decades to preserve and honor her brother's legacy. Her work has included a novel, the relocation of a Phantom jet in his honor, and her latest effort, a documentary about Lance, which is premiering tomorrow evening at the Milwaukee Film Festival.
It's called Saijon, and it aims to share the full story of Lance's life and his legacy. It's written, directed, and produced by Saijon Rosina and fellow Milwaukee native Tim Seymour. They joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski, and Janine explained when a documentary became one of her many projects dedicated to her brother.
This, for me in particular, became very clear to me about a decade ago that I needed to be very involved and instrumental in giving the message and the voice to Lance's full life. And I met Tim Seymour through a series of events, and it was very serendipitous because he too knew Lance's story but wanted to discover more of what that story was about. He grew up in Bayview. He went to Bayview High School. He was aware of Lance's legacy. And after he and I spoke for a bit, we decided that we were going to attempt to make our first film together. And so I think it was about 6 years ago that we actually started production on it.
So, Tim, what was going through your mind initially when Janine asked you to get involved, to dive into this story deeper than what you knew of it?
Well, it was a mutual thing, I think. I recognized the Saijon name when we were working at Janine's studio and just offhandedly asked her if she was related to Lance. And, of course, she said she was his sister, which was quite amazing to me. We got to talking about the story, and then Janine recommended the book Into the Mouth of the Cat by Malcolm McConnell, which I read and devoured, made some notes, and then it occurred to me that this would make a really nice documentary, and then we began discussions about it. We were very blessed to have a wealth of archival resources and people who were still with us, who survived, who were there. And they were more than willing to come and talk to us. And we began a process of collecting. We really had no narrative direction or really any long-term plan. We just felt that, you know, while these folks are with us, we should get these guys on camera and ask some questions. And from there, it began waxing and waning in its form until about last year, really. We got sort of the critical mass interviews where we knew we had a narrative. And then we went ahead and developed that and subsequently have been able to finish the film.
So I imagine you both went through various creative processes because first step, let's just collect all of this and figure out the story and the arc later. So, you know, at its most basic level, this is a documentary that informs the viewer of a story. But what is it to the both of you creatively as you went through this?
Well, it was creative growth as well as personal growth, I think, for both of us. It was an interesting journey. What we both had decided that was very clear for each of us to be able to give the viewer is the fullness of Lance's story. And so we could, of course, emphasize the last 3 months of Lance's life through direct eyewitness, through interviewing some of the folks that were there, through family members, through other friends. But then we also wanted to tell the story of how he grew up. And that's where our creativity started to take flight. And so we could take those elements of Lance's life that included not only interviews, but archival family footage that really allowed us to get a view of Lance as he grew up. Because so often I will hear, as I've been speaking for decades now throughout the nation as well as around the world, about Lance's legacy. And very often they want to know who he was as a child and what decisions he made as a child and what did that look like. And very often we find that he was a regular kid that just made some really incredibly powerful decisions and prepared himself for something that he was not aware was coming, as we all do. And so if the decisions you make in small, medium, and large ways in terms of your life path, you bring your very best, you're going to be prepared for whatever's going to be in front of you, the best to your ability. So with all of that, we were able to creatively engage the viewer on a very personal level as well. We had the great fortune of connecting with an incredibly talented composer that actually composed all of the score specifically for Sijon. And so because he too was very aware of Lance's story. So that creative outlet really began to touch so many that were involved in this project.
And from a tactical standpoint, I would add, the strategy came later. The tactics came first. We just started gathering material, interviews, and then we went to Burdick School and we went to search the Corvette, and eventually we covered the jet relocation, all its potential story threads. And that was through the generous, heartfelt contribution of many production individuals in Milwaukee who I've worked with for many decades, actually, who just gave of themselves so freely to help us literally produce the stuff. We were blessed to encounter a fantastic editor. His name is Jonathan Olson, who helped us develop the narrative to its fullest. We had sort of a linear, sort of a broad strokes down, and Janine was able to get with Jonathan, and he took what we did and just made it sing and just, you know, gave it that extra value that we, being probably too close to the story, I don't think could ever have done. So we were very fortunate and grateful to Jonathan as well.
Yeah. He's a great storyteller. And so through the lens of the camera and his ability to give that message out, after we had lots of conversations, of course, of what was most important and critically important for both Tim and I to make sure that that message was clearly understood out there, because we are trying to gather a broader audience. We say all the time that this is a story that the last 3 months of his life have been recognized through the military and why he received the Medal of Honor. However, this is a much greater brushstroke that is really relevant to any individual that is looking to reach their greatest potential in whatever subject matter that is. Lance's, in the last 3 months, happens to take place in a war zone. But interestingly enough, what he did was in the quiets of the jungle by himself, which was in the quiets of the prison camp, in the shadows of what is wartime, but not specifically in a time where you're engaging in warlike activity. So this is a very unusual recognition of a young man. And in fact, the Medal of Honor, as he received it, that was in question too, whether that was traditionally what the Medal of Honor is given to a recipient, and they had determined, yes, it was. And so we have 1% of our nation serving in the military. The 99% that were missing, we wanted to be sure to give them a message that says, what do you in fact have in common with Lance? Not what separates you, but what do you have in common?
Well, and it really seems that with its collaborative community effort and focus, you know, it's a Milwaukee boy story. It's for the town. What does it mean for the both of you, especially with this being your first major film project, to have it premiere for this wider audience beyond the military that you so frequently speak to, who know Lance's story, to have it here at the Milwaukee Film Festival?
Well, for me, it's been an image I've been seeing for 10 years. And so because this is such a collaborative effort from so many talented individuals that happen to live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, but work all over the country. And so for us to showcase among our peers, among our collaborators, what we have done as a collective community and share that moment as we screen it on October 23rd. We're so very, very proud. And I couldn't think of a greater audience to celebrate it with.
Yeah, being a local person, it's quite a thrill. I think it's certainly appropriate that we're able to do this. And we very much appreciate Milwaukee Film's interest and support in allowing us to do it. So it's really great.
When I was able to see this film for the first time, I was really struck by, you know, you mentioned you have these great home video tapes. You have Lance's voice recordings. But I was also surprised by the amount of archival war footage you were able to get. Was a lot of this new to you guys just because of the fact that enough time had passed from the Vietnam War that more of these previously off-limit files were now available for you to explore and to add to that narrative?
I'm going to say first that the engine behind that is Tim. The resourcing and researching for that archival footage is painstakingly long. You have lots of places to be able to go to find that footage, but then there are costs involved with that. There is how many of these actual clips have we all seen many, many times? So Tim really dug into that, and I'll let him speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, it was a rabbit hole, to say the least. And then many times we sort of asked ourselves, do we want to continue to go down it? But we were just compelled to do so. So, yeah, there was a lot of research and many, many hours of just poking around the internet to see what was available. We were very blessed and very lucky to find some of that stuff that was available that was able to color the story in a way that I think is effective and, you know, has a real impact.
Well, I imagine it's also hard for the both of you to sift through all the materials you found, all the testimonials you recorded, you know, especially being so close to the story, Janine, you know, to be able to take a step back and ask yourself, okay, what's essential?
That was the tough part. That yeah. was the really tough
the
part.
The original, the first rough cut was like 4 hours long.
Yeah.
Of 105 hours of collective interview footage.
Okay.
So that's just for starters. And mm-hmm. so it became clearly evident to me what it means when something didn't make it and it's on the cutting room floor. And so many, as you discussed, is they're so personal. The stories are so personal for me. So it's hard for me to let go of some of that feeling like I'm not telling the wholeness of a story. That was tough. And Tim was very supportive in sort of my emotional response to some things. And so we would talk about things and we would get it cut down a little bit more. And then when we started working specifically with Jonathan Olson, as Tim had mentioned, he has a new set of eyes with a new perspective and didn't fully understand the story until he got into it more as an editor and a storyteller. And so we had many sessions where he'd say, I don't think that this moves the story forward. And I'd have to say, what do you mean? I mean, this is an important part. Nope, Janine, you're going to have to sit back down on this one. We'll agree if you want to, you know, keep it in, but this is my recommendation. And so I really had to look at his judgment on all of that. And so some of it was painfully gone and lost, but not forever. Of course, we have it all.
Yeah, I was, you know, working in commercial, industrial work, so much of it is short form these days. Attention spans are very limited. Yeah, I knew eventually a lot of stuff would have to be cut. So I wasn't quite as unexpected for me, but there's so much richness in what isn't told. So, you know, as a series of programs, it could have certainly been supported. But Jonathan was great at giving us that fresh perspective, which was so desperately needed after we had been so close to it for so long.
Janine, you mentioned earlier that there were key points, key memories, key things you wanted to be sure was in this film. What are some examples of that?
Well, I think some of that is to represent who he is as a human being and as a member of a family and as a member of a community. Again, I always say Lance, the athlete, the friend, the brother, the son, the academic, the artist. Those things were things that I really wanted to help paint a picture of so that people could take those parts of their lives and say, oh, I went through that experience. Absolutely. And so there's a much broader story about one of my favorite memories is when Lance was chosen as the king in The King and I, in the production of The King and I in Bayview High School. And we had an elaborate musical in Bayview High School's rich history of music and operettas. And so the costumes were brought in from Broadway because the director's sister worked in the wardrobe and Yul Brynner had worn that costume. The sets were beautiful. The orchestration was incredible. Everything was recorded on those operettas. And I have the original record, the LP of it. And so I have his voice forever frozen in time from that live performance. And so a sweet, sweet memory for me is when Lance did get the lead role, he came home and came in through the front door and said to my mom, well, I just wanted to say hello to the mother of the king. And she said, you got it? And he said, I did. And he said, but there's one other thing I want to do. He said, there's a part for a little princess that is in the operetta and is my daughter in the show. And he said, I'd really like to take Janine back and have her audition. Well, I was 3 years old. And so my mom said, well, who's going to watch her? And he said, I will. I'll watch her. And so with that, the next day we went back and I had my rendition of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And he stood right next to me. And that memory, that emotional connective tissue that I feel to that moment, that event, the realization, too, and in many ways throughout my life that happened with my relationship with Lance, was that he was so confident in himself that at a time where his peers, both at the Air Force Academy and stories similar to that, and in high school and before that, to have that connection with a little sister might not seem very masculine. And so the fact that he knew himself so well, and clearly for him, that was important to him, and it didn't matter what the them thought. What happens is they begin to lose their voice and they begin to connect with the fact of how you as an individual, you're so solid in who you are and how you know yourself, that that becomes so irrelevant. And so that was a lesson for me too, to believe in what I believed in and energetically move toward that. It doesn't matter what the they think. And so he showed me that lesson very early. But I often see those as moments that a young man gets to express himself in a way that is emotional and sweet and filled with love. And so he could show that facet to me very, very easily. So moments like that throughout my life with him were critically important.
And what struck me is Lance struggled mightily academically at the academy. And through the letters and recordings that we were able to find, he was having a real hard time. And certainly his father was reacting as though maybe he had placed too much pressure on him. But he, through his articulated thoughts, was amazing in how he stuck to his principles and just never quit. In fact, he had to give up his lifelong dream of playing football. Because he had to do that to succeed academically and as an officer. So that's the one thing that really stands out to me, is he really did struggle at that point, and he was able to find the internal wherewithal to do what was needed, make a hard choice, and succeed.
Well, you both certainly do his story great justice with the documentary, and I'm very excited for a wider Milwaukee audience to see it.
Thank you.
Janine Cijohn Rosina and Tim Seymour are the directors, writers, and producers of the new documentary called Cijohn. They spoke with Audrey Nowakowski.
The film makes its public premiere at the Oriental Theater tomorrow evening as a part of the Milwaukee Film Festival. You can find out more and see past coverage of Cijohn dedication projects at WUWM.com.